Hello everyone, welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and joining me for this week's pod is a familiar voice, I hope. It's Stuart Smith. Stu, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks John. It's good to be back. Yeah, it feels like it's been a while, but good to be able to talk about J2 once again, because I've been in a bit of a football-free zone for the past couple of weeks with Gifu, so it's you've caught me at a good time.
Yeah, that's right. Plenty of news out of FC Gifu, isn't it, Stu, about rearranged games due to the COVID-19 quarantines. Hopefully things will be back to normal soon. But yeah, good to have you back. And thanks for agreeing to come on. It's much appreciated. So for this pod, we're going to review the J2 action from last weekend, round 7. We'll start by talking about the games from Saturday, Stu, and a pair of high-scoring home wins, first of all. Iwata picked up their fourth win in 5 matches by beating a pretty sorry-looking Matsumoto 4-1 at Yamaha Stadium. This game turned on a penalty decision about 5 minutes before half-time, didn't it, Stu? A shot from Iwata's Masaya Matsumoto hit visiting defender Yuya Hashiuchi, a favourite of Big Pod, of course. Replays seemed to show that the ball had actually hit Hashiuchi in the back, but a penalty for handball was given, and Lukian scored emphatically 4 goals so far this season for him. Iwata doubled their lead thanks to an own goal early in the second half. A low cross from the left caused havoc inside the Matsumoto 6-yard box, and it seemed like, Matsumoto's Kojiro Shinohara seemed to get the last touch that took the ball over the line. That was in the 56th minute, but Matsumoto pulled a goal back about 4 minutes later. Iwata's goalkeeper Ryuki Mura made his first real mistake of the season, getting caught underneath a high cross, and Kunitomo Suzuki headed in his second goal in 2 games. So it's 2-1 to Iwata at this point, but just 3 minutes later, Iwata restored their 2-goal lead, Hiroki Yamada sweeping the ball in from about 12 yards after a knockdown from a right-wing cross. Right at the end, Hiroki Ito fired in a low shot on the counter-attack to make it 4-1, and that result leaves Iwata in 5th place, 7 points off the automatic promotion spots, whereas Matsumoto are 3rd bottom of the early table and still have just the 1 win from their opening 7 matches. Before I get your reaction, Stu, there was a high-scoring home win also for Tokyo Verde on Saturday. They beat Yamaguchi 3-1 at Ajinomoto. Frenetic start to this match. Ren Komatsu nearly put Yamaguchi in front in just the 4th minute, but Verdi's Koken Kato made a good clearance right on the goal line to keep the ball out. It was just a temporary delay in Yamaguchi taking the lead, though, because Komatsu did get his goal just 7 minutes later. Kensuke Sato sent a corner kick to the back post. Verdi's goalkeeper Mateus didn't deal with it especially well. He got caught underneath the ball after rushing off his line, and Komatsu was able to head in the ball across the line before it was eventually cleared. This lead for Yamaguchi lasted all of 2 minutes, though. Ryoga Sato, fresh from scoring a double on his first start for Verdi last week, was able to fire in after Ryota Kajikawa dummied Takayuki Fukumura's low cross. And the turnaround was complete in the 24th minute. Yamaguchi's goalkeeper Kentaro Seki could only parry a shot from Junki Koike to the edge of the 6-yard box, and Ryoya Yamashita nipped in to make it 2-1. Both sides had chances after that. Seki did brilliantly to keep out a Koken Kato header from a corner before half-time. And Mateus went a long way to redeeming himself by making a fine double save early on in the second half from a Yamaguchi corner. The game was up, though, on the hour. Koike was sent clean through. Seki came rushing out to confront him, but that just made it easy for Koike. He slotted the ball in to make it 3-1. 6 goals for the season for him so far, having a fantastic start to 2021. So Verdi beat Yamaguchi 3-1. That means they've had back-to-back wins since that 7-0 mauling away at Niigata. And Yamaguchi, with plenty of work to do there, second bottom. So Stu, plenty of goals on Saturday. Iwata 4, Matsumoto 1. Tokyo Verdi 3, Yamaguchi 1. What did you think?
There could be a lot to get through, but I think that the Jubilo versus Matsumoto game, I'm not convinced that Jubilo are that good, but I'm slightly worried about Matsumoto now. I think they've only won one out of the 7 games. They've only scored 5 goals. Yeah, I was expecting much better from them, but they look pretty stodgy, pretty stale. I know Kunitomo Suzuki scored, like you said, twice now, but they just lack any kind of dynamism up front. they brought in a whole host of midfielders this year, and I'm surprised they haven't started playing Junichi Paro Tanaka, the ex-Renofa guy that they brought in, because I think he's someone that can add a spark to them. But I mean, the thing is, like, these teams, they're choosing a bad year to to really start badly, I think, given that four teams are going down. But I mean, the bottom of the table's still in the embryonic stages of the season, and it's pretty like clustered together, so it's probably not time to hit the major panic buttons yet. But like, Matsumoto, I've got to start pulling their fingers out. Jubilo, yeah, I'll believe it when I see them play well with my own eyes. I think I think they took advantage of things that went their way on Saturday, which they didn't do last year, and so well done to them for that. I'm still not convinced about them though, and I'm not really expecting any promotion challenge from them this year. I think Renov, I think they're staring down the barrel, to be perfectly blunt with you. I think that they used to be a team that I enjoyed watching, but now the whole essence of the club seems to have been, there seems to be a magnet place near the compass. I don't know what's going on with them now. This, the Watanabe appointment, while objectively kind of looks decent, but for my money, the ethos of the club has been lost somewhat with all these kind of veteran, they've just become another club, if that makes sense, like another club where veterans just kind of come along for a couple of years at the end of their careers or whatnot. They used to be like a development club. We had this discussion a long time ago, like Masahiro Shimoda, he was so adept at coaching players, but coaching a team, yeah, we're not too sure. But Renofa just look listless at the moment, and I think it'll be a really long season for them. I think Verdi, they've bounced back from their Niigata trouble. A bit of a light phrase, we're getting dicked 7-0 away from home. But this kid Sato up front looks really good. Two goals, and his movement's really good as well. And Verdi's movement, when it clicks for them, when they're in the groove, I mean, they've got so much, they've got so many options up front or just behind them, because Koike gets forward, you got Yuya Sato there, got Yamashita on the wing as well, and that's not including Fukumura, who does his best work going forward on the left. Yeah, they've always needed just someone to kind of just play up top and just hold that central forward position so that other people can maneuver behind. If Sato continues, I know it's very early in his development, but if they found someone like that, then Verdi have the opportunity to be a decent side. They're not a promotion caliber side, but they've got stuff they can build on. And if they keep blooding these youngsters, I think they'll do okay. But you can't go far wrong when you've got Koike and Yuya Sato playing as well as they've ever played. So, good luck to Verdi with that. But I think there's problems for Renofa and to a certain extent Matsumoto as well.
Definitely interesting to see Matsumoto down there in the kind of, as you mentioned, embryonic stages of the season, but that relegation zone, has Matsumoto in it, doesn't it? Yamaguchi are in there. It's going to be a long, hard season for both of them as it stands. And yeah, Verdi, yeah, they always seem to produce some good youngsters that we've never heard of. And I think I was very worried about them scoring goals pre-season. And it's not been a problem in home games. I think away from home, they've struggled a bit.
Well, they don't often produce good forwards, I think, unless my memory is deceiving me. Like, these young midfielders, like ball-playing midfielders and like small technical players, you know, like Joel Fujita or Shion Inoue, or those are just a couple of ones in the recent memory. Like, actual good forwards, I don't really remember Verdi producing so much so.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I think that they're almost kind of not exactly pioneering, but they're certainly kind of exponents of the strikerless formation, aren't they? If you look at their lineup, it's been like Koike and Yamashita listed as the two strikers, but they're not really what you would consider, like, there's no target man, you know, or no. there's no centre forward to use the parlance that we grew up with. So there's still Jailton Paraíba now to come in, you know, the Brazilian forward. He is more of a target man, so it'd be interesting to see him added as an option. And I suppose they had target men last year, didn't they, in the form of Ryohei Hayashi or Leandro and Yoshito Okubo, and none of them really did any good. So we'll wait to see, Stu. But yeah, so far so good. for Verdi, at least, especially in home games. Two of the games on Saturday ended in draws. Stu, firstly, Akita versus Omiya at the Soyu Stadium finished 0-0. I think the most exciting thing happened before the kickoff in this match. Omiya had to make a last-minute change in goal. The named starting goalkeeper, Tomoki Ueda, I think injured himself in the pre-match warm-up, so he was switched out for Filip Klajic, the Serbian goalkeeper, making his first appearance of the season. So the game finished 0-0, but I think on the balance of play, Akita might be happier with the point than Omiya. I felt that Yudai Tanaka, and Akita goalkeeper, was certainly the busier of the two goalkeepers based on the highlights that I saw. So Akita continuing to impress in a kind of slow but steady way, I think we can say. For Omiya, I think they'll be pleased to go three games unbeaten now, and that leaves them 13th in the early table. Kofu's game at home to Kitakyushu was also a stalemate. This finished 1-1. Kofu very much the more dangerous side in this game, so I think Kitakyushu will be delighted to take a point back home. It seemed like Kofu were destined to score midway through the first half. Jin Izumisawa's cross was perfect for Kazushi Mitsuhira to head on goal, but Kitakyushu's goalkeeper Kenshin Yoshimaru made a superb save. From the resulting corner, a combination of Yoshimaru again and a well-placed defender on the line kept Kofu out. Kitakyushu's defence was breached just before half-time, though. This time, Mitsuhira set up Izumisawa with a through ball, and when Izumisawa went clear, he rounded Yoshimaru to slot into an unguarded net. So Kofu 1-0 up at the break. Kitakyushu's goalkeeper Yoshimaru was subbed at half-time, so kind of more goalkeeper drama, Stu. Presumably this was due to an injury, and Ko Shimura came on as Kitakyushu's goalkeeper in the second half, his first appearance of the season. Kofu pressed hard to get a second goal, but it was actually Kitakyushu who found an equaliser. In the 71st minute, their substitute Taiga Maekawa was sent clear, but forced quite wide of the goal by Kofu's keeper Kosuke Okanishi. Okanishi eventually blocked Maekawa's shot, but Takamitsu Tomiyama was in exactly the right place to head in the loose ball to equalise. After that, Kofu looked more likely to win it. Izumisawa rattled the post with a volley from outside the box, and the Brazilian defender Mendes, up from the back, fired wide late on, should have done better, but it finished 1-1. So Kofu, no wins in three for them. For Kitakyushu, they're on a five-match unbeaten run now, albeit four of those games have been draws. What did you make of these two draws on Saturday, Stu?
Probably pretty similar to what you thought and what you've described. I think Omiya looked a lot better than I've seen them recently against Akita. And I think that you're right in saying that Akita will probably be the happier team getting a point with that. Although we have seen Akita keep clean sheets very often in the last year and a half or so. So, yeah, I mean, it shows that Akita are doing the dirty stuff. You know, they can hold their own, and that's got to be good going forward. But I would also, if I was an Omiya supporter, I'd be pretty happy with that kind of performance. It looked a lot better than the listless stuff I watched earlier this year. And I think that, yeah, both teams will take positives out of that. And I think Corfu will rue the fact that they don't really have a top, I don't want to say top class striker, but because Mitsuhira is pretty good, but I think if they had a real kind of striker who is capable of hitting 20 goals a year, they would have won this game, I think. And I think they go on to win quite a few more games this year as well. They had everything going for them in this game, except they conceded a goal to a sucker punch, really. They should have won this game, but they didn't. And full credit to Kitakyushu. We thought this might be, I don't want to put words in your mouth, sorry, I thought this would be a very long season for Kitakyushu, given the amount of good players that they lost. But five games unbeaten, like you said, getting into that not losing habit. And yeah, it just breeds every time you, it's like incremental gains. Every time you kind of add to that record of not losing, it gives you that extra little bit of belief that, yeah, we are good enough to compete at this level, and we do have good players, and we can deal with adversity. And I think this was a really good point for Kitakyushu. I think Corfu will rue that, but at the end of the day, they didn't put the ball in the back of the net enough. And yeah, full credit to Shinji Kobayashi for masterminding another good result for Kitakyushu.
Yeah, I think we have to give Kita Kyushu some credit for tightening up their defence, which looked kind of, you know, all over the place in the first couple of rounds, didn't it? They've definitely been a lot more solid since having a couple of defeats early on. And yeah, I thought we saw the good and the bad side of Kofu in that game, because like you said, for the first sort of 70 minutes, they were very dominant. They looked bright and lively and were causing Kita Kyushu all kinds of problems. It seemed like they were going to get the second goal and go on and win. But once Kita Kyushu equalised with the sucker punch, like you said, Kofu didn't really have any other ideas other than to just keep doing what they'd been doing, you know, for the first 70-odd minutes. So yeah, it's... I'm not sure if it's a top-class striker issue, but certainly a lack of having something different on the bench, you know, that they could bring on to kind of change the game. A difference-making kind of player was a problem. And I totally agree with you about Akita and Omiya. It was one of those games where I don't think either side was playing for a draw. That's not what I mean. But neither side was busting a gut in the last 5 minutes to kind of throw players forward either. I think both teams are fairly happy to get a point out of that game. One more match from the Saturday slate, Stu, and it was an important one for Nagasaki, who made it two wins in a row by coming from behind to beat Gunma 2-1 away from home. Nagasaki gave away an incredible goal in just the second minute of this game. From a Nagasaki corner, the ball broke loose for Genki Omai on the edge of his own penalty area, and he sent Junya Kato racing clear on a counter-attack, and then a combination of Kato and Toshiya Tanaka ended up with Kato firing the ball into the empty Nagasaki net with about six defenders racing back to try and catch them. I know this doesn't apply if you're a Nagasaki supporter, Stu, but this was an absolutely hilarious goal. Gunma went close to adding a second later in the first half. Nagasaki's goalkeeper Kenta Tokushige made a good save from Tatsuya Uchida's header, and then another header from Hiroto Hatao hit the crossbar and came back out. Midway through the second half, though, Nagasaki were suddenly level. Freire played a long ball out of defence, which sent Edgar Junior clean through, and he controlled the ball beautifully before lobbing Keiki Shimizu in the Gunma goal for 1-1. I don't think this was my favourite goal from the weekend, but in terms of technical ability, it was probably the best. The first touch was just, from another dimension from Edgar Junior for that goal. Fantastic. He wasn't finished yet. He scored Nagasaki's winner just 7 minutes later, this time swivelling and then firing the ball into Shimizu's far corner from just inside the penalty area. Again, not my favourite goal from the weekend matches, but probably from a technical standpoint, one of the best. Two great goals from him. And that's how it finished. Gunma 1, Nagasaki 2. So heartbreak for Gunma, who've now had four defeats in their last five matches. For Nagasaki, I wasn't sure if they were improving or not based on this game. I think Edgar Junior is definitely improving, we can say. I don't know, what did you make of this one, Stu?
Again, it's pretty hard to add to what you said. Those two goals from Edgar Junior at J1 level, that's why they look so out of place at Gunma. It was hard fought. It's a bit harder fought than the Nagasaki fans would probably like and probably expect. It maybe gives Nagasaki supporters a little food for thought. But having Edgar Junior is a wild card. Like it's a tiebreaker in these kind of, in the same way I just talked about Corfu. If you put Edgar Junior in Corfu's team, they beat Kita Kyushu. And if you take Edgar Junior out of Nagasaki's team, they don't win this game. And I think that that's a very obvious breakdown, but sometimes the difference is that clear. Edgar Junior is so good. I think he'll win a lot more games on his own for Nagasaki going forward. But if I were Nagasaki, I'd be kind of just a little bit, not shy, but I'd be a little bit, it would make me pause for thought at the labored kind of way that they won this game. But a win's a win. It's 3 points. It doesn't really matter how those wins comes about. And yeah, I like you said, heartbreak for Gunma. I think it's going to be a pretty long season for them. But yeah, a much needed. So that was their second win in a row, right? Nagasaki's, I think. Did they win? Yeah. So maybe, just maybe, they're beginning to hit their stride.
Yeah, I think it's funny. We talked about how in Kofu's match we saw kind of the good and the bad from them. I think it was the same for Nagasaki, where the, you know, that goal, that there are kind of pub teams back in the UK that would not be happy to concede a goal like that from their own corner. It's ridiculous. But then to kind of come back, you know, play your way back into the game. And then obviously with the you can't argue with the quality of the goals from Edgar Junior, as we've described. So I'd completely forgotten that Victor Ibarbo is still to come back for Nagasaki as well. So he's another, you know, talking of kind of match winning, you know, wild cards. He could have an important role to play.
Well, I see that Luan was busy making friends with Gunma players and sideline staff when he came on as a substitute as well. So they do have a few kind of options, I suppose, I completely forgot about Ibarbo as well, but they got Luan to come off the bench. I noticed Kamen Togashi was in and about the lineup as well. So they do have options,
I accidentally transferred Luan to a Yamagata last week when I mixed him up with Lilinha. So I'm glad to see that's not the case and he's still at Nagasaki. Yeah, all good stuff, Stu. That's our review of the Saturday action. Let's take a quick comfort break now. After a little bit of music, we're going to get back together and talk about the six games from Sunday. J-Talk Extra Time. Welcome back, everyone. Stu is still with me, so we're going to move on and talk about the round seven games from Sunday in last weekend's J2 action. First of all, Stu, Niigata are still top of the table. This is after they picked up their sixth win in seven, winning 2-0 away at Yamagata. This turned out to be a pretty comfortable win for Niigata, as far as I could see, although Yamagata did have the ball in the net from a free kick right at the end of the first half. The referee ruled this goal out for, I'm not entirely sure, but I think a pretty soft foul in the penalty area. So I think maybe Yamagata were a little bit unlucky not to take the lead just before half time. Yamagata, though, shot themselves in the foot about 10 minutes into the second half. Some slack play in defence allowed Shion Honma to rob the Yamagata defender Yuta Kumamoto, and Honma crossed for Yoshiaki Takagi, March's J2 Player of the Month, no less, to tap in his sixth goal of a very productive season. The lead was doubled in the 77th minute when Yamagata's goalkeeper Victor, making his second start of the season, very uncharacteristically made a mistake. He fumbled across from Honma into his own net. It's not often you see a goalkeeper of his calibre doing that. So it was 2-0 to Niigata in the 77th minute. Yamagata rallied and their captain Takumi Yamada saw a header cleared off the line late on. But that was it. There was no Vinicius Araujo in the Yamagata squad and no cutting edge really as a result. Yeah, it finished 2-0 to Niigata. That puts them 6 points clear of the chasing pack in the automatic promotion spots. Yamagata, my pre-season promotion pick, just have one win from the seven matches, and that drops them into the relegation zone at the moment. So, there we go. Niigata are joined, Stu, on 19 points at the top of the table by FC Ryukyu, who won 2-0 away at Mito in round seven. This was an open game as usual, where Mito are concerned. Ryukyu's goalkeeper Junto Taguchi made some excellent saves. I seem to say that every week, but it was true again here, especially early on when he blocked a shot from Masato Nakayama at close range. At the other end, Mito's goalkeeper Ayumi Niikawa made a very similar save from Takuma Abe. So it was 0-0 at the break. Abe should have put Ryukyu in front just after half-time when he sprung Mito's offside trap. I've written trap with inverted commas in my notes because it wasn't the best example of an offside trap you will ever see. But Abe's first effort was saved again by Niikawa, and then he blazed the rebound well over the crossbar. Ryukyu then stunned Mito with two goals in the space of 3 minutes. Firstly, Shintaro Shimizu scored from a Koya Kazama corner kick on the hour mark. I think the ball actually went in off Shimizu's back in the end. He went up for a header and the ball hit his back and went in. Just after that, a perfect right-wing cross from Keita Tanaka was tucked away by Koki Kiyotake to make it 2-0, and the game was set up for Ryukyu to close things out fairly comfortably. Yeah, once again, Taguchi and the Ryukyu goal was equal to everything that Mito had to offer, had to throw at him. 2-0 win for Ryukyu, very impressive stuff. And I noticed that they've just conceded three goals in their seven matches so far, Stu. And for comparison, after seven rounds last season, they'd conceded 15. So again, not hard to see where the improvements come for Ryukyu. And we did have a Twitter kind of a comment, more than a question, I think, from Jeff Okinawa Aussie. How about Ryukyu, basically, is his plaintive cry. So what do you think of the games, Stu? 2-0 wins away from home for Niigata, Yamagata, and Ryukyu at Mito.
I'm very impressed with this goalkeeper they've got, Taguchi. Like, the save he made from Nakayama in the first half when he made himself big was a really impressive save. And given it was 0-0 at the time, you could point to that as kind of one of the building blocks for the win. Ryukyu, I thought this in preseason. I can't remember if I said it to you on one of the preseason pods or something, but for this level, they've got so many attacking options. As long as Takuma Abe stays fit, I know that he missed a couple of chances in this game, but the mere fact that he's there is so vital to Ryukyu's attacking play, in that it allows the players behind him to kind of make hay as well. In, like we said before, with Tokyo Verde, with Ryoga Sato, if he can occupy the center forward spot, it's really important and it really benefits the players behind. It's the same thing for Ryukyu, but Takuma Abe is in and of himself a really, really good striker as well. Mito and those, and they're not the attacking juggernaut they were last year, but they're no slouches. And for Ryukyu to go there and, you know, not dominate, but they were the better side, and the win was not undeserved. In fact, it was well deserved. And at some point, we're going to have to start taking Ryukyu seriously. I know some people already are. They just score goals. They have it in them. They've got, and they can score in lots of different ways as well. So they scored from across from the left-hand side, across from the right-hand side. They could have had another couple of goals with long balls through the middle. They're kind of difficult to defend against, and Ryukyu look good. That isn't surprising, to be perfectly honest. Niigata took advantage of some slack Yamagata play. It's not often that Victor makes those kind of mistakes, but it was his mistake. He won't want to look at that too many times again. Yeah, if you do give Shion Homma the ball 25 yards out, then you are going to concede quite a few times out of 100. So Niigata and Ryukyu, there's no doubt that they are the two best teams in the league at the moment. It's interesting that they both play the same formation, and they both have kind of players just behind the front man who are playing really, really well at the moment. Obviously, I think Koya Kazama is playing really well at Ryukyu. Takagi is playing sensationally for Niigata. And yeah, like, Niigata have got Koji Suzuki. We wondered pre-season what the drop-off from Chon Tese would be. Obviously, the goals are not coming that much for Suzuki, but again, he's good enough to occupy defenders' minds and the space that kind of gives the more creative and more dynamic players behind him space to play in. So those two are looking really good, and not really that surprising, to be quite frank.
Yeah, they're already 6 points clear of the chasing pack. We're heading for a kind of Akita-style procession, aren't we, at this rate? But I'm sure there are plenty more twists and turns to come in the next 35 rounds. For me, on Ryukyu, this was the first time, and I think I'm probably being swayed a little bit by the form that they're in, but I looked at their the squad graphic on DAZN, you know, the formation and the subs, and I thought, huh, this is a pretty strong team. This looks like a top six team, because it wasn't just the first 11, but there were good players on the bench as well. So, yeah, I think, like you said, we're heading into quite the kind of traditional big stretch of games, you know, up until Golden Week. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how they're doing after that run of games. Yeah, but maybe it was just as simple as changing the goalkeeper, spiking Lee Yong-jik's drinks so that he can't play at centre-back anymore, and teaching Tetsuya Chinen how to trap a ball. I don't know. Yeah, we've probably oversimplified it a little bit. Yeah, it's really good to see Ryukyu up there on the table on merit, and I think it gives hope to a lot of other teams, and also you know, makes us ask questions of teams that have more resources and bigger budgets who are not up at the top of the table, which we'll come on to shortly, I'm sure. A game that had just about everything Stu came at Ninjinia Stadium. Now, last week, Sean Carroll and I made fun of this match by saying it wasn't going to be Dortmund or Liverpool. But in the end, the bottom club, Ehime, were denied their first win of the season by a 96th-minute equaliser. This game finished Ehime 2, Okayama 2. Ehime in control at the break, 2-0 up after a brace from Takumu Kawamura. His first goal was an absolute rocket from 25 yards, followed by a low effort from inside the penalty area that went in off the post after he was set up by Shuya Iwai. Iwai making his first appearance of the season for Ehime. Satoki Uejo got Okayama back into it with a trademark 20-yard thunderbolt. That was in the 62nd minute. And that got Ehime bombs squeaking left and right, Stu. They just about got the ball clear in a goalmouth scramble moments after Uejo's goal. And in a dramatic finale, Ehime's goalkeeper Yota Akimoto had to make a superb save from Rikito Inoue's header. That was in the 95th minute. That led to an Okayama corner when the ball was only half cleared to the edge of the penalty area. The Okayama youngster Yuto Hikida making his debut. He'd only come on in the 86th minute for his very first J-League appearance. He fired in a brilliant volley that Akimoto just couldn't get near. That made it 2-2, and I think that was the last kick of the game. The referee blew for full time straight after that, so wow. We should mention, just in mitigation, Okayama's regular left back, Shuhei Tokumoto. He was named in the starting lineup, but fell ill during the warm-up, and he was replaced by before the kickoff by Wakaba Shimoguchi. So I hope Tokumoto is feeling better soon. But yeah, pulsating match, finishing 2-2. Ehime stay bottom, and Okayama, by our preseason kind of predictions, there relatively impressively in 12th place. What did you make of this game, Stu?
Well, Dortmund and Liverpool wish they could put on this kind of show, because this was, it's so surprising that four goals of the quality that we saw in this game came between two teams you just wouldn't expect it to happen to. Ehime will be kind of sick as the proverbial dog to let a 2-0 lead slip. I don't know if Noritada Saneyoshi was actually in the dugout. I can't remember off the top of my head, but he's the new Ehime manager, so he will have seen stuff that he liked, and he will see things that didn't impress him. Going, like, taking a step back, I mean, Ehime had to change their manager. They literally had to. They would have had no chance of staying up with their old manager, Izumi, at least now with Saneyoshi. Obviously, he's not renowned for tightening things up at the back, but it wouldn't surprise me if he were to go out and sign a few youngsters from Kyoto or from even the Kansai area where he's been based. And at least they've got a fighting chance now. Okayama always have this kind of like high quality potential, because Uejo is just a fantastic player playing in a really mediocre side. His goal was excellent. That Hikida, I mean, I almost want him to retire now, because he's not, no matter how good he is, I'm not sure he'll ever have a better moment on a football pitch than that, because that was just an outstanding volley. Last kick of the game. Big props to Okayama goalkeeper Junki Kanayama for making a nuisance of himself in the opposition penalty area. Always like to see that. But this was a low-key game going in, but it was an absolutely fantastic game to watch. The goals are of such a high standard. The drama was kind of stuff that you find difficult to script, and I think it was a great advert for J2. And yeah, never judge a book by its cover, and I'll apologize for writing Ehime off, but I think they've got a fighting chance. With I still think they're not in the top 18 best teams in the league, but at least they've got a chance of finding that fifth worst spot with Saneyoshi in charge.
I guess by Ehime standards, that's we're talking them up, aren't we here?
Yes, and they've got a fantastic kit. I mean, it's the first time I've really seen or taken notice of their kit. Like, they've got the tiger patterns on the sleeves. That's badass. I like that. That's a good move.
I think you're right to mention Noritada Saneyoshi coming in as the new manager after Shigenari Izumi was dismissed. I think I'd mentioned that on Twitter, but not on the pod. So, yeah, thanks for reminding me. Yeah, so Ehime under new management in the form of Noritada Saneyoshi at the moment. I think ordinarily, a team that's rock bottom and hasn't won a match being denied their first win by an equaliser in the 96th minute with the last kick, that would almost, from a mental strength, mental health standpoint, finish a team off, I think, even at this early stage. But they're kind of insulated a little bit from that, aren't they? Because even though that was really disappointing, it's the first match with a new manager. And it's a point, yeah, that's right. And it won't be as damaging as, it won't be a fatal blow to their kind of chances of staying up. But yeah, I'm a bit more pessimistic than you. I think Ehime are going to have a real fight on their hands to stay out of the bottom four. But I think we did see, and I'm kind of repeating myself, we saw it with Kofu in their match. We saw it with Nagasaki, obviously kind of almost a different level. But we saw the good and bad of Ehime, didn't we? We saw them completely control this game up until half time, and you know, the first 50 minutes of the second half as well, they were fine, and then it all kind of just went wrong for them in the last half an hour.
They will struggle, like they will be in a relegation battle, but if they had stuck with Izumi, they would be relegated. There is literally, in my mind, no doubt about that. But at least now they've got a little bit of a chance to get themselves out of the relegation zone. They've got plenty of time. What, they've got 35 games left? I mean, they need some new players. They need a bit of depth, but Sanayoshi has connections. It's not difficult to imagine him going back to Kyoto and picking a couple of players to go from there to join him on loan. This was the change in the manager. It's never nice when people get fired, but they had to do this. Yeah, they didn't win this game, but they didn't lose it either. It probably felt like a defeat, but getting that first point under a new manager and showing that they can go toe-to-toe with teams. Like, they did go 2-0 up, and it took two fantastic goals for them to be pegged back. Yeah, I think once the dust settles, they'll appreciate that it's a hard-earned point. But they did earn that point. They weren't second best in that game. They were Okayama's equals, and only a wonder strike prevented them from picking up all 3 points.
Plenty of encouragement for Ehime supporters after a fairly rocky first month of the season, I suppose. Yeah. To round up the rest of the action from Sunday, Kanazawa stay third in the league table. This is despite losing 1-0 at home to Jeff Chiba. Tomoya Miki had enough chances to score two or three times for Chiba in the first half, including a golden opportunity that came from a mistake from the Kanazawa centre-back Honoya Shoji. But Miki somehow missed the target when he should have done better. For Kanazawa, Yuji Senuma hit the crossbar with a deflected shot in the first half. The vital goal in this game came from a Chiba corner just before the hour. Their left-back Itsuki Oda did brilliantly to contort his body, twist his body and angle a header across the Kanazawa goalkeeper Masaaki Goto and into the far corner. So 1-0 after an hour. After that, Kanazawa's best chance fell to Hayato Otani, but he was off target. I should mention, Kanazawa Dreaming on Twitter was saying that Kanazawa had two or three good penalty shouts in this game, which didn't show up mysteriously on the DAZN highlights package.
He also referenced Jeff United's shithousery, which I quite liked as well.
Yeah, I think it's a long time. We often use the S word, don't we, when we're talking about Jeff? But with Hauser, he added as a new one. So Kanazawa losing for the first time since the opening day, ending a run of three straight wins for them. But yeah, it's been a good start to the season overall for Kanazawa, I think. Also winning 1-0 away from home at the weekend were Kyoto, now in fourth place. They won 1-0 at Machida. That's a third win in four matches for Kyoto. Machida survived a scare in the 14th minute of this game, but their goalkeeper Koki Fukui was able to hold on to the ball in a fairly frenetic goalmouth scramble. Just a temporary let-off for Machida, though. Peter Utaka fired Kyoto ahead from the edge of the penalty area. That was in the 21st minute after some very nice approach play from Kyoto's impressive left-back Takuya Ogiwara on loan from Urawa. Kyoto were able to keep Machida pretty much at arm's length after that. I think Utaka could have doubled the lead for the visitors about 12 minutes from full-time, but Fukui did well to block his shot. And some other kind of related news, Machida striker Chong Tizzy will be out injured for about a month with an injury picked up in training. So Machida will be hoping that they can get Dudu out of the J-League quarantine bubble, up to speed and into their squad ASAP, I think. For Kyoto, it's back-to-back wins for the first time this season, whereas for Machida, that was their third defeat in the last four matches. And Stu, last and most definitely least, for round 7, the game between Tochigi and Sagamihara at Tochigi Green Stadium finished 0-0. Kishio Yano went close with a header for Tochigi, and Sagamihara's big defender Daiki Ume nearly scored from a corner kick at the other end, but a draw was very much a fair result in a pretty drab contest. For Sagamihara, that's four draws from their first seven games at J2 level, which sort of keeps them out of the relegation zone, albeit on goal difference at the moment. For Tochigi, this is a four-match unbeaten run for them now. I think they'll be pretty happy with being eighth in the league table after seven rounds. So, Stu, Kanazawa 0, Jeff Chiba 1, Machida 0, Kyoto 1, and Tochigi 0, Sagamihara 0. What do you think?
This might not be a popular opinion, but that Tochigi and Sagamihara game looked like a relegation, two relegation teams. It was grim. It was absolutely grim watching those highlights. I don't think either of those two teams are that good, and I expect both of them to be down and around the bottom come the end of the season, with apologies to people who support those teams. Jeff, I mean, what a bunch of S's, really. I can't really be bothered talking about them, because whenever you think you've got a handle on them, like, they just go and pull something, and when you think they've turned the corner, they just get kind of pulverized at home against a rubbish team. I don't know what to make of Jeff. I mean, it's no different from any other season, but they defy analysis, I think. So I'll probably just leave it there. And Kyoto, I mean, quietly, they're in fourth place now. They've got exactly the same record as Reigen Kanazawa. Peter Utaka is not lost a step. What a fine goal by him, just one touch, bang, straight into the bottom corner. They didn't look really under that much pressure. They seemed to kind of keep Machida at arm's length. I think with Kyoto, it's always these, they're a good side, but they have these random kind of capitulations, like when they just lost it at home against Jubilo. And I think they're a dangerous side. And on any given week, I think they're more than a match for anyone that they come up against, but it's that consistency which Niigata and Ryukyu have at the moment that Kyoto don't have. I can see Kyoto gaining that consistency once they become more familiar with Chokije's kind of system and the way he wants to play, once the players kind of accept what he wants them to do. I noticed that Yoshihiro Shoji is nowhere to be seen near the squad. My gut feeling tells me that Shoji and Chokije's football is incompatible, and it wouldn't surprise me to see Shoji kind of look elsewhere for football come sometime this year. But I think Kyoto do have genuine kind of potential to put up a promotion run, because they're only going to get more comfortable with the manager's system. But they do need to eradicate those erratic, kind of strange-looking defeats that happen every so often.
Yeah, consistency is the key word, isn't it, when it comes to promotion challenge, especially this year, because again, it's only the top two who go up to J1 automatically. No playoffs, you know, no top six to kind of fall back on. One thing I noticed just from the highlights of that Kyoto game was some very inventive free kick routines that they put on, and I think that's an example of it's a cliche, but hard work on the training ground, I think. And I always like to see something inventive or creative when there's a set piece, you know, a corner or a free kick. And I think that tells me that hard work is going on behind the scenes there, definitely in an attacking sense. I think they've probably still got some work to do as a defensive unit, Kyoto. I think we're probably saying something similar last year. But yeah, they're kind of quietly, handily placed, aren't they, in fourth. So we'll see how they do from here on out. Stu, I think we is getting close to our respective bedtimes. Just before I let you go, let's look ahead at the games that are coming up this weekend in round eight. The vast majority of the games in this round are going to be on Saturday. That's because there's a full round of midweek J2, which was enough to send shivers down the spine of podcast hosts last season. But luckily, it's not as many of those midweek rounds this year. But yeah, full midweek round next Wednesday. So to give teams time to prepare, most of the action this weekend is on Saturday, April the 17th. So we have Akita against Yamagata, Omiya hosting Ehime, Jeff Chiba against Tochigi. What was that about, Jeff, losing home games against poor teams? Matsumoto against Kofu. I think the big match in terms of league table anyway is Niigata against Kanazawa. That's first versus third. Kyoto host Kitakyushu, a game that I like the look of. Yamaguchi versus Gunma is on the slate as well. Nagasaki host Machida. Okayama take on Mito. And second place Ryukyu, they host Tokyo Verdy. And there's just one game on the Sunday slate for round 8. That's Sunday the 18th of April, Sagamihara against Iwata. Which games are you wanting to keep an eye on in round 8, Stu?
I like the look of Akita and Yamagata, a bit of a Tohoku derby. I think one of the things I forgot to mention when talking about Yamagata and Niigata, their game, is that in any ordinary season, that would have been a full house. Niigata would have filled the away end. Yamagata would have filled the home end. It would have been a raucous atmosphere. And I think it's a shame that fans aren't allowed in numbers still now, because I think Yamagata would have taken a large following to Akita, and I think Akita probably would have filled up the place for that game. But I think it will be a good game that kind of Yamagata need to take something out of. I think I want you to hook Tochigi's win at Jeff Chiba into my veins directly, because I'm going to call it right now.
1-0 or 2-1?
I'm going to say 5-2, 4-0 at halftime. Book it, you know it. But I think Ryukyu and Verdy, I think that'll be a really good game. I'm more than confident that that's not going to end 0-0. Apologies, Jeff. But I think that's two good attacking units. Now, obviously, Ryukyu are a good defensive unit and Verdy are not. I think that'll be a really good game to watch, actually. It's interesting that they kick off, 5 o'clock, and Niigata kick off at, well, they missed kick off at 1 or 2 o'clock because I can't see it on my screen. So Ryukyu will know what Niigata will have done. And I think Ryukyu and Verdy will be a good game.
Yeah, I think they're all good shouts. I think, it's still early days, so it's sometimes quite difficult to pick out which games on the slate are the most intriguing ones. But I think you can't go wrong with the round 8 games. They all look pretty good to me. Yeah, except obviously that 1-0 win for Tochigi away, Jeff. We already know what's going to happen with that one. Stu, thanks so much for your analysis of the weekend games, your predictions or your preview for round 8. Just as a programming note for the listeners, because there's a midweek round coming up on April the 21st, I think what we're going to do is I will record a solo extra time episode to review the round 8 games next week. And then I believe Mike Innes of J-Talk Short Corner fame, he's volunteered, or I volunteered him to do a midweek solo pod reviewing the round 9 games. So the midweek J2 round from April the 21st, Wednesday, Mike's going to do a solo pod to bring you up to speed with those games. The reason we decided to do that is just so that we can edit the pods and get them out quickly in a timely fashion, so that you can listen to the weekend review before the midweek games, and then you can listen to the midweek review before the next round of weekend games, if that makes sense, if it's not too complicated. So hopefully that works well over the next couple of rounds. But Stu, thanks so much for coming on and reviewing the latest J2 action for me. I think it's kind of exciting to think we've still got 35 rounds to go, if a little bit terrifying at the same time. So hopefully you'll be back again soon. Yeah, and maybe even hosting again if work commitments will allow you. So thanks for coming on. It's a pleasure and much appreciated.
Yeah, my pleasure, John, my pleasure. Well, I look forward to doing it again soon.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, well, yeah, thanks again, Stu. For now, please stay tuned, because after another short break, previously mentioned Mike Innes is going to be back hosting the J-Talk Short Corner segment for this week. That's a review of the latest J3 action, J3 Round 5. So yeah, thanks for listening so far. And thanks if you're a patron as well for supporting us with cold hard cash. We appreciate that too. And here comes Mike Innes with J-Talk Short Corner from me and Stu. Bye for now. J-Talk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to J-Talk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J-League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on matches in round 5 of the league season and introducing qualification for the Emperor's Cup as it impacts upon J3 teams. Before the main business, a quick look at some items of news since the last pod. Following the shock departure of Nobuyuki Uenoyama, Kamatemari Sanuki have appointed as their new coach a familiar face on the J3 scene, Zdravko Zemunovic. The 67-year-old from Serbia has experience in Japan dating back to 1995, and his most recent J-League job was at FC Gifu, where he took charge for the first half of 2020 before being sacked in September. Since then, Zemunovic has been coach of the team at Aioi Gakuin High School in Hyogo Prefecture. His first game at Senaki looks set to be away to Gainare Tottori on Sunday the 25th of April. Gifu's league games in rounds 4 and 5, postponed due to positive COVID tests among the Gifu squad, have both been rescheduled. The round 4 fixture at Tottori will now take place on Wednesday the 21st of April at the Axis Bird Stadium, and the round 5 match at home to Azul Claro Numazu is on the slate for Wednesday the 5th of May at Nagaragawa. Meanwhile, Numazu report their striker Hadi Fayad will require surgery on his knee ligaments. The 21-year-old Malaysian, on loan from Fajiano Okayama, sadly looks set to be out for most of the season. Now to the action in round 5. There was one game on Saturday the 10th of April, which saw AC Nagano Parseiro pick up a fourth straight draw as their match at Fujieda MyFC finished 1-1. The home side went ahead just before half-time when a blocked shot rebounded to wide midfield player Masahiko Sugita, who fired in from 12 yards for his first J-League goal. Nagano pulled level in the 76th minute through roving Takuma Mizutani, who, considering he's a right-back, was surprisingly well-placed 2 yards out, heading home when the goalkeeper could only parry a shot by Taichi Takeda. Parseiro had a great chance to take all 3 points in injury time, but veteran forward Hidetaka Kanazono's penalty kick was brilliantly saved by Takuya Sugimoto, diving low to his right. This was a brighter display by Fujieda, with experienced Jun Suzuki beginning to pull the strings in central midfield. But Nagano, promotion contenders? Not on these results, not on these performances. On to the Sunday games, and shock pace setters Iwate Gurugia Morioka kept their superb start going with a 3-0 win at Tohoku neighbours Vanrare Hachinohe. Iwate coach Yutaka Akita gave a first start of the season to Morelato and rookie midfielder Shunji Masuda, while for Hachinohe, Tomoyuki Hirose at right back made his pro debut following a winter move from Reinmare Aomori. This was a strong-looking performance by Iwate, who brushed the hosts aside by means of 10 very impressive minutes at the start of the second half. First, Brenner received a throw-in near the byline and fed in a sharp low cross for Kazuki Arinaga to finish at the far post. Then, moments later, Brenner this time set up Morelato, whose beautiful shot from the corner of the penalty area curved round Hachinohe keeper Takuji Yokoyama and in. Could have been 3-0 in the 56th minute, but after a lovely team move on the right-hand side, Taisuke Nakamura shot over the bar from 10 yards to Brenner's visible annoyance. The win was finally sealed 10 minutes from time. Another tidy series of passes on the Iwate right, freeing up rookie Toi Kagami, who took advantage of an immobile Hachinohe back line to squeeze the ball under Yokoyama and inside the post. And so it ended, Hachinohe 0, Iwate 3, a game that showed Gurugia as a team with more in their locker, well-placed to improve further, and an immeasurably different side from how they were 5 rounds into the 2020 season. There was much drama at Pikara Stadium, where struggling Kamatamari Senoki hosted Katare Toyama. Senoki went into the game under caretaker boss Toshihiro Nishimura, with 3 straight losses and not even a single goal scored. But in his second game in charge, Nishimura only had to wait until the 12th minute to see Kamatamare get on the score sheet when Kentaro Shigematsu found Shunta Nakamura in space and the on-loan Yamagata youngster finished well from 15 yards. Within 8 minutes, though, Senaki were behind as first Toyama's Tsubasa Yoshihira hooked the ball across goal, keeper Suguru Asanuma couldn't hold on to it, and Nobuyuki Shina drove it home. And then, aided by the almost complete absence of an opposition defence, Shoma Otoizumi's cross shot again escaped Asanuma, and again Shina was on hand to poke the loose ball over the line for 2-1. Both sides had further opportunities to score, but it wasn't until the 87th minute that another goal came, when Senuki's Ikki Kawasaki slung a hopeful high ball into the box. Toyama substitute keeper Kazuki Saito, on for the injured Yohei Nishibe, came out for it but completely misjudged the flight of the ball, allowing big defender Takumi Komatsu to head into an empty net for a wildly celebrated equaliser. But resilience is not something Kamatamari are known for at present, and in injury time, Toyama's Makoto Rindo threw himself at an in-swinging corner to deflect the ball past Asanuma for a final score of Senuki 2, Toyama 3. More heartbreak for Kamatamari's long-suffering fans, but for the first time this season, their team showed at least something going forward. The budding of a possible partnership between Shigematsu and Nakamura for Zemunovic to work with. Katare, meanwhile, have defensive frailties of their own, but they also have the 3 points. Gainare Tottori became the latest in a growing line of established J3 teams to find themselves unable to cope with Tegevajaro Miyazaki's attacking play. Tottori looked almost overrun in the first half at the Unilever Stadium, where the likes of Kaito Umeda, Kosuke Fujioka and Kenta Okuma only added to their burgeoning reputation with a third consecutive 2-1 win. Miyazaki almost went in front as early as the 8th minute, Umeda's header bringing a superb fingertip save out of Ken Tajiri, with Keigo Hashimoto just unable to convert the follow-up. 14 minutes in, it was 1-0, Tottori defender Koki Ishii being made to look pretty foolish by some Umeda trickery and then appearing to handle in the penalty area. But his escape was short-lived as the ball came out to Okuma, whose cross to the far post was rifled in by that man, Umeda. Goal number 3 in an explosive start to his J-League career. Soon afterwards, the home side extended their lead, an attack down the Tegevajaro right coming to Umeda in the area, his delicate through pass being flicked inside the post by Fujioka, to the delight of the Miyazaki fans. Surely they hadn't expected this year to see football of such elegance being made to look so easy. Takeno Kiyonaga pulled one back for Gainare from close range on the hour, and the nearest they came to making it 2-2 was in the closing minutes when Yuya Taguchi's powerful shot went over the bar. But right now, it's Tegevajaro who are establishing themselves as contenders, while underachieving bigger clubs like Tottori are being left to slip off the pace. Fukushima United against Roasso Kumamoto saw United keeper Kaito Yamamoto line up against his old team, while for Roasso, striker Toshiki Takahashi played his first game of the season after injury. The key moment in the first half was an archetypal J3 defensive wobble, this time executed by Kumamoto, and under no pressure back pass to Yuya Sato got under the goalkeeper's feet, and Ismaila, alert to the possibility of disaster and no doubt stung by criticism on last week's pod, stole the ball from the hapless Sato and rolled it into an empty net. A free kick by lively rookie Naohiro Sugiyama was Kumamoto's best effort in the opening period, but the visitors did draw level in the 71st minute, and again it was a blunder that led to the goal. Fukushima had a free kick 20 yards outside their own penalty box, and captain Makoto Kawanishi, trying to launch a quick counter-attack, instead kicked the ball hard into teammate Keita Shiba standing just in front of him. It rebounded to Shuhei Kamimura, who advanced unhindered to the edge of the area and fired in. Fukushima nearly regained the lead 10 minutes from time when substitute Hiroto Yukie's powerful header was goal-bound, only for Sato to save brilliantly. But with the clock ticking into injury time, a high free kick was launched into the home penalty area, the defence failed to clear, and rookie Wataru Iwashita prodded the ball over the line to make the final score Fukushima 1, Kumamoto 2. At Mitsuzawa, YSCC Yokohama and Kagoshima United played out an evenly matched 0-0 draw, perhaps the closest to a goal coming in first half stoppage time, when Yusei Kayanuma's dynamic sprint ended in a 30-yard screamer that YSCC's Ryosuke Sagawa tipped round the post. A useful point for YSCC, and at least they managed to avoid a sending off this week, but they've only scored once in 5 matches. Kagoshima are mid-table and have kept clean sheets in their last 2 games, but it feels as if neither side has the balance right between solid back line and potent attack. The round 5 game between FC Gifu and Azul Claro Numazu was postponed, and the team with a bye this week were FC Imabari. So what does all this mean for the current league table? Top of the pile after round 5 are Iwate with 11 points from 5 games, the club's best ever start to a J3 season. Just behind them are Toyama and this exciting Miyazaki side, both with 10 points from 5. Down at the bottom, Imabari have 3 points from 4 games, YSCC have 2 from 5, and Sanuki 0 from 4. At this point in the pod, I'd usually preview the round 6 matches, but this weekend there's a break in the league schedule. While most J3 sides get time off from competitive football, 5 will be taking part in knockout tournaments, the winners of which will represent their home prefectures in the Emperor's Cup. The division's other teams will do the same in their prefectures over the coming weeks. Depending on how prefectural football associations organise their local tournaments, J3 clubs are fast-tracked to either the semi-finals or finals. Playing in semi-finals, then, on Sunday the 18th of April are Fujieda My FC against Tokoha University and Azul Claro Numazu against Honda FC, both in Shizuoka Prefecture, and YSCC Yokohama against Senshu University in Kanagawa. Playing in finals on the same day are Iwate Guruja Morioka against Fuji University in Iwate Prefecture and Gainare Tottori against Yonago Genki in Tottori. I'll report next time on the results of all these games. With the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say, thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.